Thank you for listening to the Voice Ministries podcast. To get more information about Voice, or if you were blessed by this message and want to sow into our ministry, go to our website at voiceministries.com.
Jesus falls asleep, and he's asleep in the boat. And so the storm comes up, and the disciples, they're okay until the boat starts taking on water. It says the boat is taking on water, and they are in serious danger at that point. And at that point, they're like freaking, as we all would, freaking out. And they can't bail fast enough, you know, and their boat is in danger of sinking. And so they go and wake up the Lord. And telling him, we're in danger, we're gonna sink, and he's like, so he gets up and he rebukes the storm, and it all calms down, and they're like shocked, and in fear, sudden fear and amazement, and he's like, "What's wrong with you? Did you not trust me? Can you not trust me? Can you not trust who I am?" And it's like they forgot that there's an us in the boat. We often forget there's us. When he says, "Let's us go," that we, you know, the Holy Spirit lives within us. And when our storm and our little boat that we're on our path looks like it's taking on water, at that point we often freak out, and we think suddenly that we're alone. The enemy's tactic and main goal is to separate us from our relationship with the Lord. And so he'll make us think that our boat is sinking, that Jesus somehow left the boat, and he's not in our boat anymore. But the Lord wants us to remember that no matter what our circumstance looks like, and no matter how bad it gets, that he's in the boat with us. It's an us. We are no longer an I. Once we've accepted Christ Jesus as Lord and Savior, his very spirit dwells within us, and we are no longer an I. We're an us. John 17:20 talks, and a couple other places in John where it talks about that we are one with the Lord. We're one with God, one with Jesus, one with each other. We're one. And so we're never alone. And the enemy wants to try and convince us that we are. So I just want to remind you of that, just to set up where Crystal's going to go. She's going to talk about part of her testimony this morning. And so I invite you to come on up. All of you know this is our youngest daughter, Crystal. And she's had quite a journey in the last 3 years especially. Very difficult. And so her testimony is powerful, because she's still standing in confidence in her boat. So I just want to pray for you. Father, I just lift up Crystal. And I thank you, God. I thank you for her. I thank you that she is driven to your feet. I bless her. God, Chris and I just are proud to be her parents. We just thank you for her, and we thank you that you have given her a testimony that is worth telling, that it's powerful and mighty because of who you are and what you're doing and have done for her. So I just bless her this morning. God, I ask you to keep her in peace, and that her words just convey the message that needs to be told of your goodness, grace, and mercy in the middle of a storm. So, God, we thank you, and we just praise you in Jesus' name.
Good morning. I have it. I had to type this out because I could tell you the beginning, and then I would tell you a little bit, and then I would tell you the ending. I know I'd forget most everything in the middle. So this is part of my testimony of my journey. Jesus asked me to get in the boat and cross the water with him. about 5 years ago. And I said, yes, of course, I'll follow you anywhere, Lord. So we started pushing out the boat into the water. And Jesus paused and he said, Crystal, will you give up your family for me? And I stopped and stared hard at him, not knowing what that meant. 100 different things went through my head. I thought about it and I weighed my choices. Keep walking on the beach that I know and carry on with a good Christian religion and the life that I knew. Or get in the boat in uncharted waters and find the treasures that I had been starving for. I really had to think about this. I was scared of leaving my solid ground. I looked at Jesus, crying, terrified. And with a trembling voice, I said, yes, Jesus, I will give up my family for you. But please don't let anything happen. I have wanted to be with the Lord my whole life. I love Sunday school. I love sword drills. Everybody did sword drills. They don't do those anymore. I love standing with my family singing songs during church. I've never questioned that there is a creator God that loves me and wants me to follow him. And by nature, I'm a compliant person. By woundedness, I was a submissive person in fear of being rejected. I wanted to make people happy, to love and be loved. So I thought I needed to agree with everyone and fix everyone's problems, make them happy, make them comfortable, and that they would be impressed with me, they'd like to be around me, they'd want to be my friend. This doesn't work so well when you've been one way throughout your marriage, and then your mom has to go start getting healing, and you watch the transformation taking place in her life, and the hurts inside you desperately desire to be healed too. I received so much healing, so much freedom from the healing that I started receiving. My love grew for the Lord, and a deeper hunger for something more started. My confidence in the Lord grew as well, finding my voice and having different opinions from those around me. Seeking the Lord and inviting him in everything that I was doing was so exciting to me. This happened slowly over the few years, but not everyone was happy with the changes in me. The storm clouds around my boat started forming very slowly, and I didn't see them at first. Jesus kept his eyes on me, telling me to keep my eyes on him. I would try for a while, and then I saw the clouds in the distance. I had married my best friend. We were very young and very much in love. Our lives revolved around each other. Problem number one. I lived to make my husband happy. Problem number two. We had our first son, and life was great. We went to church every Sunday, Wednesday, prayed at dinner, bedtime, included God in the hard times. We were living a good Christian life. We went through some bumps, but we're growing closer as our family grew to more sons, and life was grand for a while. God became less and less important to my husband as he climbed the corporate ladder. At the same time, something in me wanted more with God, but I didn't know what to do about it. Living a good Christian life was no longer satisfying to me. I had a hunger deep inside, but I didn't know what to do about it. So I became more involved in church. I did children's ministry, thinking that's what I needed to do more church. I did every age as my kids moved through the grades. I would follow, helping and leading in each of their classes. I was trying to feed my hunger with doing things for the Lord. And if I was good enough, had faith enough, and did enough, I could turn my husband back around. It was my responsibility to save him. But it didn't change his heart, and I became frustrated, getting angry when he didn't want to go to the church with the boys and I. But then I had a love encounter with the Lord on a getaway weekend called the Walk of Emmaus. I learned to give up my negative emotions and worries of my husband to the Lord. That this Christian walk is not about me saving anyone. It's about me truly loving without fear and expectation of receiving anything in return. I came home with a new perspective. A new peace had come over me, and my husband noticed. A year later, he gave his life back to the Lord and changed his life to seek him with everything he could. He saw He said he saw the peace on me and that that I was no longer angry with me. My attitude changed for him, and he no longer felt the condemnation and the judgment that I had for him. Our marriage became stronger and our family thrived. My husband loved and studied apologetics. He taught our sons to defend their faith with the best of them. He showed me a new heart for worship and a reverence for the Lord. He opened a new world for me that I had been hungering for. He showed it to me, and I wanted more. But God is scary, because you think that you can control him if you keep him in your box. But once opened, you have two choices. Climb out and see it's not about you. Your eyes are open to the vastness and the endless possibilities. You are in awe of I am. Or you close your box tight because it's safe. You get to choose how God works in your theology. You get to be a good Christian. But my box got opened, and I was on the floor in awe of this I am, and I desperately wanted out of my box to have everything that I could get. I went after more healing because I wanted to clean my house of my old stuff so I could fill it with the truth and the glory of the Lord. I wanted freedom to be who I was made to be, which I never knew that I had a separate identity, that God created me for something specific, that I am actually unique. I didn't have to try to be what God wanted me to be to make him happy. He was already happy with me because he made me. I just needed to be me, but I had to figure out who that was because I thought I needed changing and I wasn't good enough and I was just boring me. I met a charismatic woman who started attending my conservative church. I never met anyone like her. I thought she was kind of crazy, but there was something inside me that was very attracted to her. I saw the fireworks in her and I wanted it. She introduced me to many names I had never heard before, like Bill and Benny Johnson, Mike Bickle, and Heidi Baker. She told me about the Bethel Church on the internet had podcasts, which I had also never heard about, podcasts. I thought I could, so she told me to listen to those. So I Googled what a podcast was and downloaded everything that I could on my iPod. And I listened to words that were so powerful and life-giving. I had found a new language that filled my heart with more, the more that I was looking for. I wrote down everything, every verse, words I didn't understand. I had to use the dictionary because I now get them, but the language we use is so foreign to what I had ever known before. My husband was not comfortable with me going to this place Mom and Dad started going to called Voice, let alone taking our kids. Mom and Dad were out of control, and Voice was out of control, and they could easily abuse the Holy Spirit. They might even be a cult. So I would take the boys to church, to our conservative church, and find a vacant room and have my own church, worshiping with my new prophetic music and studying with my iPod. I felt so alive, and a fire just kept growing hotter and hotter. By this time, my husband had stopped going to church again. He actually had views, atheistic views. He was like, was kind of done with God. We seemed to disagree on everything now. Parenting and God were dividing us. My boat started taking on water as the waves started getting larger from the coming storm. I tried fixing the holes and bailing water because I still had this mentality that I could, if I fix it, if I was good enough, if I had enough faith, I thought I still needed to fix this, do something. You can't just sit there. So I tried fixing holes and bailing water. I looked at Jesus while he was just standing there and appearing to do nothing but watch me. I said, "Lord, help me bail. Do you not see that we're in trouble?" He just smiled and stared deeply into my eyes and said, "Do you trust me?" He held out his hands and said, "Take hold and keep your eyes on me. Don't look at the storm around you. He was so peaceful when he talked. His soft voice quieted the yell of the wind around me. But when the water splashed on my face, my eyes would leave his. My husband was becoming angry and bitter towards me. He felt abandoned and alone. He wanted to be my center because a world that you can control feels safe. I thought maybe I was wrong in what I was doing. Maybe I was supposed to put aside my silly notions of climbing out of the box. I was being selfish as I was disrupting my family. My boys were suffering too. They were in the middle of parents with two different ideas that contradicted each other. They were fighting to keep their own heads above water. I felt like a bad mother, an unloving wife, and a disillusioned Christian. I prayed. I asked the Lord. I begged him, Lord, am I wrong? I'm sorry if I'm wrong. Help me to know what to do, please. I prayed this for a year and a half before I understood that I could never climb back into my box and just do. He filled me with so much peace. I desperately desired to be with him, and he desperately desired to partner with me and show me things that I have never dreamed of doing in this life. So I kept moving across the water, sometimes sinking with one eye on Jesus and the other eye on the water. But I knew everything was going to be better and that my family would be restored because I would believe. My husband told me that he couldn't do this anymore and he was leaving. I was shocked, but I didn't believe it would really happen. I had been declaring, going to the throne room, speaking out for God's justice and everything else that I heard people doing to get things changed. I ran to the Lord for my comfort and felt his peace and love surround me every day. But then sometimes I would crumble on my bed and sob, crying out to the Lord in my pain. If I believed hard enough, I could make everything okay again. True to my husband's words, he moved out and filed for divorce right away. Still, I thought, not going to happen. Everything would be healed. God's going to change his heart. 5 weeks later, 4 days before our 20th anniversary, I was signing my life away. But I had hope because I knew the judge had 4 days to refuse the divorce. That was what's going to happen. God, it is so like you to wait till the last minute. I know my parents were somewhat worried about me. I was in my own world with my strong desire for my story to turn out the way I knew God wanted it to be. A few days later, I got a death certificate in the mail. I was divorced, and my marriage had died. I would have believed purple raindrops falling from the sky to be more likely than this tragedy. I was stunned. I didn't know what I was supposed to do, who I was supposed to be. I didn't understand how this was allowed to happen. It was so surreal, just like when someone close to you dies. You know, they're not there anymore, but it doesn't seem real. And they could be there any minute and everything would be fine. My identity was partially still being married. Without this, I was lost. I remember walking into a store to buy some clothes. I had some money and I needed some things. I started looking, picked up a shirt, and tears filled my eyes. The clothes seemed dull. I looked around and had no desire to buy anything. I could feel everything was meaningless. I walked to my car, and the sun was cold, the air was stale, and my heart was broken. I was sinking fast. But Jesus, never leaving me, held his hands out and looked me in the eyes. I saw his eyes just as my head dipped below the water. I thrust my hands out, and he pulled me up. I held so tight to him and repented of watching my storm and letting him go. Instantly, the sun was bright, and I could smell the sweetness of the air. My God was bigger than my storm. And I believe now, with trust from his word, instead of if I ignore the bad and pray for the good, it will go away. Then 3 days before Christmas 2012, the Lord wanted to show me one more thing I was hanging on to, and I didn't realize it. my hopes and dreams. I had hopes and dreams of what I still thought could happen. I wanted my husband to be healed. I wanted for us to have a marriage again, and I wanted our family to be together, to be the kingdom family that I had always wanted to be. So this whole time, it's been a year and a half now, and this whole time I've still been thinking and praying, God's going to change this. He's going to change his heart. It's going to be okay. I'm going to have the family and the life I wanted. So those are my hopes and dreams, to be reconciled with my husband in a healed marriage and living to be a kingdom family. When I realized the Lord was asking me to give this up, I was sitting with Mom, and I remember the feeling. I was terrified. I mean, just this from head to toe, I just, like somebody was twisting a rope. I could just feel it in my gut. Oh no, Lord, don't ask me to give that up, because if I gave that up, that mean it would never happen. And I was so afraid of that never happening, because I so wanted that so badly for my sons and for me, for my ex-husband to be healed, you know, because I know who he is. I know who God sees him as, and that's what I want to be, that with him. So I just sat there stunned, and I knew I, you know, in theory, because I want to give everything to the Lord, but oh man, that was, took my breath away. So Mom and I sat through dinner, talked this out, did some theophostic, as we always do, and I wasn't sure, so we went shopping. Finished our evening, and when I got home, has anybody seen the Lord of the Rings? I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan. Okay, Mom and Dad. Okay, so in the story, there is this ring, this powerful ring that was created, and to me, it represented my will, because the one that wears it, the one that has it, becomes infatuated with this, always is staring at it. He rubs it. He looks at it. He dreams about it. He's lusting after it. It's his precious, yes. And that's what my hopes and dreams were. They were my precious. They were everything that I was holding on to. And I would look at it even more than the Lord. I saw that I was looking at this ring, and I wanted it so badly. And there's this part at the end, the very end of the third movie, where the whole journey is he's out to destroy this ring. But the more he's on his way to destroy it, the more in love and infatuated he becomes with this ring. And I finally, by the end of that evening, I finally saw myself taking my ring, taking my hopes and dreams, and throwing them into the fire and destroying it. And as soon as I did that, I felt, I mean, I really felt a peace and a freedom. I felt a weight lift off me. And then I was like, why didn't I do that before? What was so scary? Because it was okay. I really knew it was okay. If my way, if my will didn't turn out the way I wanted to, I was going to be okay. It was okay. Deuteronomy 31:6 is my verse. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them. For the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. And I have repeated that over and over and over, almost daily for the last 5 years. I just need that. Lord will never leave me or forsake me. I have to say that. My God will never leave me. This is my comfort and my peace. This is my truth. His strength and confidence has grown in me so much. It has left the fear in hell where it belongs. I am learning to sit with Jesus and just be as we ride together in our boat. I still have a storm around me sometimes. I have 3 sons. Yes, there are storms. But I see them differently now. I love looking into Jesus' eyes and knowing the storm, no matter how big or noisy It doesn't matter because my Lord is not afraid. And things still happen at home with the boys and I. And at first there's this, I should be worried about this. And then it's like, no. He has each one of them. Each one of them are going on their own journey in their own boat. And I am to pray for them and I am to love them. And God will take care of the rest. I don't know what tomorrow exactly looks like, but I'm learning to be excited for God's best. He has been faithful to my sons, and he has passionately loved them through their own hurts. They have started seeing his love for them and who they are in him. We are healing together and growing closer, just as Jesus is bringing us unity. That's it.
I just want to ask Crystal a couple questions about one of the things that caused this struggle to be so strong, besides her own will, but were some prophetic words that she heard on her own and that were spoken over her. And would you be willing to share just a little bit about that? Because it's a good lesson in when not to listen to the prophetic or to use great caution or wisdom we need discernment when we listen to the prophetic and listen to what we think we're hearing from the Lord, even for ourselves. When we're in a time of great emotional stress and struggle, when our will is very strong, that's when we need to be most cautious. So I'd like her to share a little bit about what happened there.
I don't know, several years ago, maybe about four or five years ago, when I would come, sometimes I'd come to the School of Prophets. I did the class with Roy, The Art of Hearing God. I did that. And I would hear, like, frequently when I would get a word, is your family is going to be going through a trial, and your family is going to be going through a healing time. Your family will be healed and your family will be united. Those were the major themes. And I heard, I think what gave me a lot of confidence, I thought I specifically heard no divorce. And that's what I stuck to. And so that gave me, I even told my husband during this time, you know, he said, why aren't you so upset about this? And I said, because I just know God's going to heal our family and we will be restored because that's what he wants. He said, Crystal, don't you see what's happening in front of your eyes? And I said, and I thought that was, you know, that's my storm, and not to look at my storm. Yes, I see it, but that's not the way it's going to turn out. And this irritated him so much.
So in that emotional fear, that storm, she heard strongly that thing about no divorce. Was so strong in her that when the divorce happened, she was like in shock. It was like traumatic post syndrome after that. You know, she was just shocked, and that right there. If we didn't know inner healing, and if she weren't strong in the Lord, that would have done it, because it was so powerful. So what happens is our emotions can be so strong that people can prophesy off of your emotion, even if they don't even know what's going on in your life. They'll pick up that there's a struggle, but they'll feel your desire, and they'll prophesy off of your desire, and then you'll hear off of your desire. You'll hear what you want to hear, because the enemy's right there. You know, he's speaking too. So that discernment and caution at that time needs to be on high alert. When you have a lot of emotion, that's when I'm most cautious. If I'm listening to the prophetic, I really weigh it out and let it ride out, rather than making If I have a lot of emotion, I know that I can be my own worst enemy right there. And so I just ride it out in faith and walk with the Lord, which is what she ended up doing. During that time, we weren't allowed to speak to her about anything. And Mike Bickle or any Bill Johnson, we couldn't share anything spiritual with her, or the boys. So that's why she didn't know about any of those things that we were discovering. That's why. But isn't it awesome that God brought through their own church? God brought that information to her because He wanted her to know, and she knew we knew things like that, and it was killing her that she couldn't get into that. But since it came through another source, at first it was okay, and then it got to be not okay because it was too much like her mom and dad. But still, that God, you know, He'll get it. He'll do it. He wants you. He wants you to move forward. He wants you to learn and grow and get Him out of the box. So that was awesome the way the Lord worked on that. After this happened, just within 2-3 months, Crystal started getting some changes in her body started happening. And she started getting paler and weaker. Do you want to share about that a little bit?
Oh, I don't remember exactly when. What was that summer that he moved out? Was that he moved out in June 2011? In June, and we like taking bike rides in the summer, and they had just got me a really nice new bike, and I was so excited, but I'm back there with the old people riding my bike, because I don't have any energy to go any faster. I like the old people.
Oh, yes.
Okay. But I wanted to be up with my kids. They're racing and they're having fun. And I, you know, I've always had energy. I really like doing things. I'm very active. But I couldn't. And I compared myself to Mom. I love Mom. But with the health issues that she has to go a little bit slower too. At a good, nice, consistent, slower pace. And I'm like, I'm 37 years old. Why am I back here? And I can't go. I mean, she was like, could go faster than I could. So this is what started. Is... just my energy started going down. I just could not do anything. We went on vacation then to Virginia. We walked in the mountains. I got sick just from walking a little bit. Like everybody passed us. And I walked, I don't know, maybe 20 feet and then I have to sit and catch my breath. My heart was pounding just like I had just worked out for an hour on cardio. My heart was pounding with every little thing I do. And we thought it was emotional. Like I was...
Yeah. And at this time, she started getting pale. Like gradually, very gradually, just really pale. She's fair anyway. But I mean, she lost all color.
I didn't realize that.
We didn't either at the time. It just was a gradual... looking back on it, I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, why didn't I see? But it was so gradual. It's weird.
So I just progressively, throughout the fall and the spring, I'm like, I have no energy. I can go and sit at my desk and I do some things. I have to sometimes go home and take a nap and I'm starting to swell. I think after Christmas... No, it was before Christmas. I'm starting to swell. Like, my ankles are getting 4 times bigger than normal. I mean, you can press on my ankle, and your fingerprint will stay there for a while. And still think it's emotional. I hate going to the doctor. Hate going to the doctor. So I take a bunch of natural stuff. Don't know what it is, but I'll just take everything. Anybody tells me that's a good immunity booster, I'll take it. And just kept... the boys started doing more and more things to help me. I was having a hard time climbing my stairs to my bedroom, and I would take a few steps, and I'd have to catch my breath because I could just boom, boom, boom. My heart just was pounding, and I had to take one of the boys grocery shopping with me, and we'd go really slow. It was like taking a 90-year-old. It was really slow. And even sometimes they, well, let's get you the cart. I said, I'm not going in the cart. That's embarrassing. And so we would just go slow, and sometimes I'd have to stop. Okay, stop. Why don't you go down to the end of the aisle and get a jar of pickles for me? I'll wait here for you. It was just, I couldn't carry the sacks of groceries. I couldn't, it was just progressively just becoming worse. And then so the next summer comes around, and my son helped me to the top of my stairs to sit on my bed, and I'm just huffing and puffing. And he looks at me, Mom, go to the doctor. I said, well, honey, I'm fine. I don't want to go to the doctor. I'm just full of toxins. I just need to detoxify. But the look on his face, he was so worried. I was like, fine. Mom's getting a blood test. You can go online and get a blood test. And there's a place in Mishawaka. So I said, okay, I'll do that. I'll go get a blood test. Went and got the blood test. They called me within 12 hours and said, I'm not a doctor, so I can't tell you, but I'm telling you right now, you need to go to the doctor. Your hemoglobin is 2.6. I said, what does that mean? And she said, a normal person's is 13 to 15. You need to go see a doctor. And I still, it's like, oh, I'll be fine. So I called my nurse friend. I said, my hemoglobin is 2.6. Oh my gosh, Crystal, you need to go to the doctor right now. I said, really? Are you sure? Yes. Crystal, please go to the doctor. All right. So this is Friday night. It's Friday night. Everybody's going to be, you know, for the weekend. They only take emergencies in on Saturday. I don't feel like an emergency. So I prayed about it Friday night, and I prayed about it Saturday morning. My friend called me back. Crystal, I just have been praying for you all morning, and I just really feel you have to go to the doctor today. I said, okay. Well, I called my doctor, and they're on vacation for 2 weeks. It's a husband and wife, so they are the office. So, like, I don't know where to go. I'll call Mom and see where she goes. Well, I knew where she went, but I didn't know the name of the place. So I'll call and see if she knows of anybody.
So I am sitting in a coffee shop in Goshen with Dr. Crowder, Rochelle Crowder. It's the first time I've ever met her. I had just met her like 5 minutes when Crystal called me, and I was interviewing her to come and speak at Voice and give her testimony of how God had healed her. And the night before, Chris had been working on our car and doing something with the brakes or something, and he couldn't get the car started. Something got weird, and he couldn't get the car started. All of the other cars that our family owns were with boys out of town Saturday morning, and our daughter Andrea was out of town, and so we had no car, so there was that going on. Crystal calls me, and I had just sat down with Dr. Crowder, and I just met her, we weren't 5 minutes into the conversation. Crystal tells me what needs to happen, and I'm like, okay, just a second, Dr. Crowder, I have a problem. And she's like, what is it? And I said, so I told her that what my daughter, what's happening with her and her blood count. And she goes, oh my goodness, I will admit her sight unseen as my patient and get her into Goshen Hospital. Tell her to leave now and not drive. She shouldn't even be driving. So she's been driving all over. So I called Krista. I told her, and she goes, Mom, all the cars are gone. And I said, well, call your dad. He'll find a car. You know, and what? And, well, I said, call your dad. He'll find a car. So she hangs up. She's, like, trying to find a car. He just, 15 minutes before she called him, got the car started. Figured out what was happening. Somebody had come into the shop and helped him, and he got the car started. So she calls me back then and says, I'm really hungry. Can I eat first? And so I asked Dr. Crowder, I said, I have another little problem here. She wants to know if she can eat. And she's like, you know, her face is like, no, no, no. And then she goes, how long has this been going on? And I said, months. She's been like this for months. And she goes, oh, well, God's keeping her alive. Go ahead and eat and then get to the hospital. So I'll let you tell them what the nurses and what they were all saying.
So I think it's silly that Dad has to drive me to the hospital because I think I can drive myself. I'm fine. I'm just emotional and toxic. And so we get to the hospital, and she said, would you like a wheelchair? We can put you in a wheelchair. No, I don't need a wheelchair. I can walk. So I'm, you know, walking and, okay, I'll take a wheelchair. I think I have a little bit of pride. And so I get the wheelchair. They're wheeling me up, and I so don't want to be in the wheelchair. I'm a little embarrassed that they're making such a big deal about this. And we get in the room. I'm like, give me my blood so I can get out. Because I think, you know, I'll just get a bag of blood, a couple hours, and I'll be out. And that's all I want. I'll sit in the hall. I don't need a room. I'll just sit in the hall, and I'll get a bag of blood. And so they start, you know, everybody always wants to hook you up to a million different things. They couldn't get in a vein. So I have, you know, 50 holes in my arms and wrists and hands. And they finally get a good vein where they can start giving me some things. They check my blood. I'm 2.6. And they are freaking out. Everybody that comes into my room, I have never heard. I've been doing this 12 years, never heard of anybody having a 2.6. A nurse in here the other week had a 3.8 hemoglobin, and she fainted. She came to work, and she fainted. I've never seen somebody up and walking around with a 2.6 alive. And still, I don't know. I still was like, okay. Can I have my blood so I can go? And so they were all, I mean, people would come in and look at me. You are white as a sheet. You know, that's what the doctor said, is you're so white. You're so, how are you walking around? How are you? I don't know, because I don't understand any of this, and I don't know.
So we find out later that at 2.5 or 6, you can go into cardiac arrest at any moment. It's a given, you will. And so she's been like this for a long time, and the Lord just really protected her. She has O negative blood, which is universal donor. She could donate blood to anybody, but O negative blood can only receive O negative blood. And so the hospital only had 2 bags. She needed 6. Or 7. They wanted to give her 7. They could only find 6. They had to police escort. I don't know why that blood needs, but police escort from other hospitals to try and get, because they don't want to give it up, because it can be used for anybody. And so they don't like giving up that blood. And so, but they did find 6 bags for her. And it took 2 days, not just... And it was slow going because her veins were so shut, you know, down because of not having any blood. During that time, I finished my interview with Dr. Crowder and went to the hospital. I was so peaceful. I mean, just so peaceful. And Chris and I spent a lot of Saturday there, and her boys were there. And then Sunday... I had to teach a turn class that Sunday, so I taught, and then we went straight to the hospital, and so we spent that morning with her, and she was perking up by then, and color, oh my goodness, her cheeks were just like bright red because of all the blood going in, and for a long time she didn't like her color. She thought the pale looked better, but I hope you're getting used to that now. Yeah. So Chris and I are at the hospital. So I call her boys, and they're on their way. It's about noon, and so we decided to meet at Hacienda in Goshen, and then we would change places. So we had lunch with the boys, but on the way there, Chris and I were talking. And he said, "How is it that you're so peaceful? How do you do that? She's near death. She was near death. We had we also had a vacation. We're like, our business is horrible. We're out of, yeah, during this time, our business is seriously struggling. We ended a job in June of last year, and we had paid for a vacation the year before, like in November. So we had paid for a vacation in Myrtle Beach. We have no money, and she's in the hospital the week before we're supposed to leave. So what do we do? You know, we're going to lose $1,000, but yet we're going to have to spend money to go that we don't have. And it was like weird place. Anyway, Chris is like, how are you so peaceful in all this? And all of a sudden, before I could answer, he's like rolling down his window. It's cold. He's rolling down his window, and he sticks his head out. So what are you doing? And he goes, you hear that? So I'm like rolling down my window to see if I can hear it. And I'm like, no. And then it gets louder. It starts getting louder. And I realize it's music, and I pick up my purse. Now, my iPod is in my purse, but it's in a padded case. And when I get out of my iPod, I back out of the program. So there's no way I could have kicked it and had it do this. And I wasn't kicking around anyway. My iPod is playing. It is well with my soul. And I just burst into tears because that was it. It was well with my soul. I so trusted the Lord here. And peace was all I had there. And so my iPod, I've had it like for 2 years. I didn't even know that there was a little crisscross arrow that you could push that would make it repeat. I didn't know how to do that. And so for 2 years, I never had it repeat. I mean, it would rotate songs. It repeated that song when I got home, like several times before I realized it was stuck and I had to figure out how to you know, so it even the Lord wanted to get that across to me as well with your soul. So so she gets out of the hospital on, was it Sunday night? Sunday night, she gets out, they let her out. Her blood count is up to 11.
They wanted me to stay an extra night too.
Right, she's stubborn. So they wanted her to stay an extra night. Her blood count is now up to 11. They would have liked for her to have another bag, but they couldn't get one. It would have had to have been farther away. So she comes home, and Dr. Crowder recommended a doctor for her to see. She calls that doctor Monday morning, and it's a specialist, and they won't let her in because she doesn't have a doctor referral. And Crystal called Dr. Crowder's office, and she wasn't taking new patients. So she calls Mom, and I called Dr. Crowder. I said, I have another little problem. So could you recommend another doctor? Because her doctor that she saw once 2 years ago, doesn't even really know her, is still on vacation. The doctor you recommended won't see her until a month, was it? Like a month out. We leave on vacation on Saturday, and she needs to be seen. And she goes, and she tried getting into my office, right? And I said, yes. And I said, but I understand. We understand that you're full. Could you? And she goes, no. Don't worry about it. I will get her in. She got her in at 2:00 that day, and by Thursday she had her into the specialist. So, do you want to share just what they found a little bit?
Okay, so. The cause of all of this is, I don't even know what a thyroid is, but my thyroid doesn't work properly, which I guess is everything that needs to go right in your body starts with your thyroid. And mine wasn't working right, and so this was the cause of it. So with a little pill I take every morning, it balances it out. And the first thing I asked her, she gave me a prescription, and I said, okay, can I go on vacation? That's what I was worried about, is I was going to miss vacation, and I didn't want to miss vacation. And she just laughed, and, yeah, I think you can go on vacation. And I felt it was amazing what I felt. My ankles didn't swell anymore. I mean, it was like the next day, no swelling, which I had to stare at my ankles for a long time. For a year, they had been 4 times the size they were supposed to, at least 4 times, maybe more. I just stared at them, and it took me probably, I think I'm just now to where the point This was in August. So the last month, I'm okay with who I see in the mirror because it was like looking at a foreign person, and it was, I didn't like it. I looked different. I looked older. I didn't like it. So now it's okay. But I felt like I was a little shaky. The next morning, just, I don't know, I had blood. My body was like, wow, it was waking up. But I had some energy, and I felt like alive. The difference was just, it was amazing.
So we went on vacation, and she kept up with everybody. I mean, she didn't skip a beat. It was an instant recovery. And so we're just so grateful. But that's how bad. So the storm was bad. I mean, she did not go into a lot of detail, but enough to let you know that the marriage stuff and the effect that it had on her sons was serious. And during that time, Jesus is still in her boat, you know. So I just want to read this. You can sit down. Thanks, honey. I want to read this scripture to you. It says, do not fear. You are more valuable than many sparrows. Therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven. Do not think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I came to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's enemies will be the members of his household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who has found his life will lose it. He who has lost his life for my sake will find it. He who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me. Sometimes our faith costs, and the cost is high. And for Crystal, it was very high. But the, you know, God's power, ability to restore and redeem her, and the reward for obedience far outweighs the cost, even in this case. Far outweighs the cost. The prize is for eternity, and the cost is for a little bit here on earth. So there's a huge payoff for obedience, and so even Jesus was obedient even unto death. You know, so we need that kind of trust and faith in Papa to bring us to a place of peace in the middle of a storm, no matter how bad the storm looks and how far you think your boat is sinking. Like she said, she had one eye in the water and one out. You know, you can't get a whole lot more than that and still be looking at the Lord. And in Matthew 11:6, it says, and blessed is he who does not take offense in me. Crystal had opportunity after opportunity to be offended at the Lord, and she refused to go there. She let love win, and never once, not that she didn't struggle with some things, especially I think one of your biggest struggles was with the prophetic word that there'd be no divorce. She really thought, she was convinced she heard that, and to reconcile that between her and the Lord was difficult, because we become so convinced of something. And what we need to be convinced of is God's faithfulness, not something that we need to be convinced of what we hear, but when our emotions are involved, then that's a bit tricky. So what we need to turn to then is God's faithfulness his love, his compassion, who he is. That's what Jesus was upset in the boat. He said, do you not trust me? Can you not trust me in my faithfulness? You know, it wasn't about anything other than that. Can we not trust in his faithfulness? So that's what we need to zero in on in those times. If you go to Jeremiah 17, so this is the result of when we can stand in obedience, when we can stand in faith and keep our eyes on Jesus in our boat, even when the boat's sinking, then it says, blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose trust is the Lord. This is Jeremiah 17, 7. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose trust is the Lord. The Lord needs to become our trust. Trusting faith, his faithfulness. He's the originator. Faith originates with him. He is, and so we can. We can have faith and trust in him because he is faithful. He's the origin. He's where faith comes from. Verse 8 here, it says, for he will be like a tree planted by the water that extends its roots by a stream and will not fear when the heat comes. But its leaves will be green and it will not be anxious in a year of drought nor cease to yield fruit. That's what we're after. We want to be like that tree planted by the water and that extends your roots. We want our roots to go long and deep. We need a taproot that goes long and deep into the well of living water with Jesus, that place of intimacy with him. When we do that, then it says it will not fear when heat comes or when the drought comes. So when you do that and you're rooted and grounded and you got a long taproot, you're not going to be easily shaken when drought comes. And it even goes far as to say, and it will not be anxious in a year of drought, nor cease to yield fruit. So even in the drought, it's still yielding fruit. When all the other trees have lost their leaves and their fruit and they're withering, those of us that stay planted by the stream and keep our eyes on the water, we're not going to cease to yield fruit. Have no fear. Crystal had to battle some fear along the way, but she battled it. She didn't agree with it. She didn't become offended. It's just an awesome example of that's not a easy thing what she lived through. I mean, that's a big storm, but yet she comes out on top. She's even more confident in God. She loves him all the more. She's all the more convinced that he's good and that he's faithful. And that's what, you know, so even if your trial looks like something like that, and no matter how bad your trial is, don't waste it. Take full advantage of it and milk it for all you can get out of it between you and Jesus. Let him envelop you in his love in that place and grow you to be that tree that bears fruit in a drought. So I just want to bless you. Thank you, Crystal, for being vulnerable. And I hope you're all blessed by her story. So, God, I just lift everyone up here to you, God, and I thank you for your faithfulness. And I thank you that you are enough. Your grace is enough. I just thank you for your heart, your grace, and your mercy. Give us a thankful heart, God, that we can be thankful in the middle of a storm because you're good. We love you in Jesus' name. This is the last class. Next week, you'll have Dave Carey, and he'll be talking about the House of Prayer.